I know we have a question and answer later, and then is Patrick in here? He'll be here next time. So this is still like a Q&A. I talked to Bob about this. I'm just going to show what I do, like as a player. And then I have this, it's so much useless knowledge about gear. Like, what just happened down there? It was like Bob was like, got this pedal, like it was like 1977, I hooked it in my Rhodes. I was like, what was it? He goes, I don't know, is this, and he's like, it was gray. And like with three details, I told him exactly what model it was. And like the Boss C one made in 1978 in Tokyo, and you can use it like this. And so please take advantage of my, I just live in this world. So there's like useless knowledge that you will probably use. When it just comes to pedals and stuff. But I wanted to talk about how I basically how I use a guitar and effects at this point in my life. And to start it though, talk about gear in general. I just want to give a shout out to you guys to went by what's the store called? The Guitar Emporium, yes, where Eric works. So they loaned us all this great gear, really great guys. I brought with me, can we get those guitars out? Are they out? Okay, so I brought four different guitars. You have Joseph, if you wouldn't mind, we'll just kind of, I'm going to just walk through, like, call it the basics. So who in here would not be bored if I walked through the basics of what's different about guitar amps and guitars? Is that okay with you guys? Okay, there's probably like two guys that know all that. I'm sorry. There might be more of you, but I'll just walk through some of that because, man, there are thousands and thousands of gear companies. You've noticed. You search for something and it's just like, it's insanity. There's so many good companies, so many good things to buy. So I'll go through that. Talk about the different guitars, a little bit of the history of how we got here with all this technology. And then I can talk about my board, and I plan on just talking about basically advice on running your signals. And I think the best way to have this clinic is while you're asking me questions, other people learn from your answer. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because it's all very similar. Like, you might ask me, hey, I have this pedal, where would you put it? Everyone can learn from that. So I think if you just, as I'm talking, kind of gather questions. My background as a player, if you were here the first time, is just rock music. I was at my brother's apartment. He's 10 years older. I didn't like music, and I heard Pearl Jam 10 on cassette tape, sitting on the floor, and I heard the guitar solo to a song called Alive. And I was like, You weren't born yet, but it was just amazing. Something about hearing that guitar, like, I don't know. I went home, I was like, started bugging my mom for a guitar, and my parents can't turn on a radio. I mean, there's no, they'll say that, you know. I'm saying that in love. It's just, my memories of music with my parents are Marty Robbins cassette tapes in my dad's truck. Do you know who that is? Anybody? I actually like it now. It's like 1950s gunfighter ballads, Western music. It's actually amazing now that I'm older. It's really cool. He was a great, really cool artist. Yeah, like that. And like, my mom was the edgy one. She would like bob her head to Creedence Clearwater Revival. So I have these very Southern roots. I grew up in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. Have you guys seen the documentary to that? So my first band ever recorded our demo in Jackson Highway Studio, which is where like Keith Richards, it would basically be where several of the Dylan albums are, the Bob Seger stuff. Mick Jagger wrote Wild Horses on the Toilet in that building. Crazy stories. All these people kept coming to Muscle Shoals because there was this group of these like five white dudes wearing like khakis and like pocket protectors, and they're the band. And then you have like these soul singers coming in. And so this whole musical environment was there, and there's nothing in Muscle Shoals. There's just like fields and like a Crystal's hamburger place or something. There's nothing there, but it's a lot of musical heritage in the air. So I got into guitar through grunge. Like, I loved Pearl Jam, that kind of stuff. As I evolved, Radiohead was a big influence in how I play the guitar. If I were to name guitar players, you know, it'd be Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead. It would be even the early Coldplay stuff. I remember hearing the record Parachutes. That was huge. My brother being 10 years older, he was always listening to things 10 years before me, which is this weird environment to grow up in. He'd be in the room next door, and his favorite band was The Cure. And oh my gosh, I hated it at the time, and now I've grown to love some of that. It's like amazing. So there's a lot of what I'm getting at is my style of guitar is pretty noisy, a lot of delays. I know in church settings, ambience is like, it's almost worn out at this point, but I've always approached that from a different angle. Like, I love sonic youth and like noise guitar. I love all that, just kind of a different thing. And then I also love, you know, I talked about my mom and like Creedence. I love that stuff. I love real Americana. I've, like, when I think of bands like Wilco or like a Ryan Adams, I either go one way or the other, and there's like no in between. I really like minimalistic. Take a Jazzmaster or a 335, plug into a little amp, and facilitate a song, or build like a soundscape to facilitate a song. And I don't feel like I know how to do the in between. I just like, it's like deer in the headlight. Like, I'm either one extreme or the other. And then I really love songwriting, and you know, get an old Martin acoustic and play that as well. But so I kind of live on those two extremes. So yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell. And being able to work with, I have these really bizarre, surreal experiences where being a 90s kid, all of these 90s bands are still trying to tour. And there'd be the bands like, I have these vivid memories of like, I'd come home from school. So my mom got me a guitar, by the way, from Sam's Club. A red Sinsonic Stratocaster, much like the blue one, but nothing like the blue one. Little amp that had a button for distortion. And I remember like playing, it was so bad. I didn't know to tune it. You can just lay those down. I feel bad for you. You're like a statue. I remember learning like Everclear riffs, like, anybody remember that song? Yeah, you do. Yeah, but like not knowing to tune, that happened about 6 months in. Probably a year in. Then I gave up. And then I met this guy from Muscle Shoals named Will McFarlane. And anybody heard of him? Yeah, Will is, I just shot a video with him in Nashville, like an artist series thing. He is insane. Bonnie Raitt walked into a bar and he was playing and she hired him, and he's one of the original Muscle Shoals guys. So when you hear Sweet Home Alabama, and he says, Muscle Shoals, they've got the Swampers. He's one of the Swampers. So he's this guy that he gets hired for what he doesn't play. And I met him when I was a teenager, and he gave me my first slide guitar lesson. I have a slide and stuff, and it's kind of his fault that I bought a pedal, because I saw him playing, and he's like doing something, I don't remember, but you know, he's playing something. Whatever. Something of that nature, probably bluesy. It might have been like literally Amazing Grace or something. So I'm like enamored. All I've ever played is, you know, I'm playing like, this isn't working. Hold on. You know, my extent of guitar is the most advanced thing ever would be like something off Pearl Jam Vitalogy. You know, just like loud, obnoxious. Stuff like that. Stuff that's just slightly annoying but beautiful. And so I see this guy, you know, he's like, just all like It's just like all feel. Jazzmaster's not the best guitar for this, by the way. But and he just had like a compressor pedal and a little slap delay, which I did not turn on for that demonstration. But I remember him saying, well, just try this. And I went to this pawn shop because my hometown was a little outside of Muscle Shoals. And we had like a Walmart that closed at 7 p.m. And that was like it. So there was a pawn shop that had a compressor pedal in it. And I bought it. And then it was, now here I stand, like obsessed with gear and pedals. That, like, so I credit him towards it. Just, you know, having all these influences. But the biggest thing with Will, he showed me two things. So little did I know he was a believer, because I wasn't born again at that time. I just met him. He played around town and stuff. He was very strange. Like, he'd wear like a kilt and like go play blues clubs. But he's like insanely good. Like, he could wear like a dog costume and you'd go watch him. He's just like, he's legendary. He'll do, if you get a chance, we'll release a video. Just watch our Instagrams and stuff. But he does this thing I just filmed with him in Nashville. He'll bend these triad chords and do these lap steel thing. It's like the craziest stuff. You saw some of it last night. It's just unreal. But he taught me two things. He said to me, first, I get paid for what I don't play. He said, I've never sold a guitar or anything in my career. Played guitar for 45 years professionally. He's played for Little Richard. He's played for Elton John. He's played on, like, I mean, Mustang Sally, stuff like crazy stuff. And he said, I get paid for what I don't play. And so later in my life, I became a session musician, right? As the pedal thing was taking off, I started making some of my living in studio sessions and touring with people or whatever. And so that always stuck with me about serving a song, like what you don't play. And effects are a big piece of that, because effects are an instrument in themselves. That's how I treat them. I think of the guitar as an instrument, you know, so like I'm serving E minor in this bar, but I could do it so many ways. There's just so many textures. It like changes everything with one click of a button. So that's always been fascinating, you know, if you're, that's where I get kicked out. And then later on, when I became a someone's at the door. See? Okay, I thought you were kicking me out. Okay. Then later on, when I became a believer, I realized he was too. And he said one other thing to me. He said, there's only, as a young Christian, I was having a hard time with like secular music versus Christian music and stuff like this. And he said to me, that's still a battle. I think it's something we all deal with, like what we take in, what we bring into us. How do we, you know, we talked about this today. What art what do you embrace? What do you pull from? But he said, there's just good and bad music, Josh. He said it like that. He said, there's just good and bad music. I understand that more and more. And with him and now working with, you know, literally these, I was talking about these 90s bands and I derailed, but I've been able to build guitar rigs or be with and hang out with these people that I would set on the edge of my bed and learn their songs. And what I learn is usually it's about what you don't play. It's about, like, the best guitar players I've seen, they just do what they do really well and simply, and they're masters of one or two things. You know, they're not, and they're just consistent, and they're good minimalists. And so I've tried to take that on in my own playing and stuff. So, yeah. But long story short, so we'll get into kind of what I do with effects and stuff. But yeah, that road is interesting. How many of you guys have met players that have influenced you? You've taken in their tricks and all that stuff. Miles Davis said, I'm a big fan of certain jazz. I like Miles Davis, Coltrane. He said, the best musicians are thieves who never get caught. And I've only stole like three things. But yeah, a lot of some dudes, like You were showing me a clip of some guy in England. It's like insane. There's like these virtuoso guys and there's whatever, but I'm lucky, you know, in my life probably if I rip off five dudes really well and make my own thing out of it. And that's really how it works. We learn from each other. There's only so many ways to deal with this guitar. I'm always amazed when I see like an 8-string guitar or something, because I can't even play the 6. You ever see those guitars? Like this many strings. Like I don't even, I mean, I'm struggling here with this, you know. But yeah, so just kind of how can we as a player kind of take things from everywhere and make our own sound? And the part of that that's really huge is the industry that I work in, and that is the sounds that we make. So let me give you a quick, off the top of my head, nerdy history of guitar electronics. I'm just going to go for it. So we'll start with, you know, guitar's been around for a while, obviously, but then people decided to amplify it. They decided to amplify it because they're playing with instruments that are naturally much louder. So you get in a swing band, you know, what's going to happen to your guy on the arch top? He's like scatting around. And you're setting out in front of, what's his name, Benny, any of those. Yeah. I mean, I see some of those videos. You can go watch like the black and white videos, and you just see this guitar player like, and you don't hear him at all. He's just like, hey, and and you can watch him, and you're like, he's amazing. Like he's just like shredding and all these inversions and like moving with every breath of the music. Can't hear a thing. It's like a really bad sound guy experience, you know? Like, the guy was like eternally trapped in the sound guy experience. So these guys like Les Paul, they decide, we gotta turn this guy up, you know? How do we amplify a guitar? So they start taking acoustic guitars and, you see this, they start taking all kinds of stuff. And basically what comes out of that invention is the Les Paul, was to take the Les Paul and the Fender Nocaster, which became a Broadcaster, which is what we call the Telecaster. This is a Nash guitar. If you like classics, Nash is my favorite brand. They make these classic Fenders. Fender doesn't make their guitars the same way. They're great guitars, but these are, when you play one of these, if you get a chance today, you just strum a chord and you're like, oh, it just feels very, very different. But for the sake of demonstration, just know the Les Paul was huge in musical innovation, things like recording multi-tracks. A lot of people don't realize it's his fault that the Beatles were able to do Sgt. Pepper. When you get down the road, he invented multi-track recording. People used to literally take a band, put them in a room with one microphone to two microphones, at most three, and you play a song really well and hope your mics are in the right place. And then you get into multi-tracking, where you have these tape machines and they're lined into each other. And that was Les Paul. He invented so many. He was like an Edison or something. I mean, just a brilliant, brilliant guy. So there's a Les Paul, obviously. And what happened was, let's take a magnet, wrap wire around it, and create a force that pulls on the strings and detects the voltage of the string. So when I hit the strings, I create voltage. A lot of people don't realize that. We always think of voltage as a wall outlet, but when I do that, my cable, it's voltage, and these create that. You plug it into an amp, and then you have a speaker, which is simply a microphone turned backwards. So an actual, you notice on the kick drum up on the stage, they have a speaker in front of the kick. They're using it as a microphone. So a lot of this is so primitive. Everything we use today, this is a model of a 52 Telecaster. So around 52 is when what we know as electric guitar became pretty much what it is. And what's really funny is no matter how technology advances, these are still just the best. Like in my opinion, when I play this guitar versus the newest newfangled PRS or something, they're great guitars. I would just rather play a 52 Tele or like the 59 Jazzmasters or 60s Jazzmasters, 59 Strats. The 335 is equally as old by Gibson. So everything that we do kind of just stems from the 50s. So then you have people using the electric guitar. I often think how crazy. If I could play louder, I would show you some really funny stuff. But the amps that they had were very small guitar amps. And I have a big collection of these. But when you turn them all the way up, it's like the most beautiful distortion ever. And these amps are from the 50s. So you think of like a really heavy guitar sound, like a band like something you'd all probably recognize is like a band like Switchfoot, like their big riffs, you know. You can get those sounds out of an amp from the 50s, just turning it up. So I always have these thoughts like, there had to be like some dude by himself, scared to death to show his friends that he was playing with some kind of evil noise, or you know what I'm saying? Because back then they're just like, you know, they're just playing jazz on an electric guitar. Even to the point where a man named Ernie Ball, I've become friends with his grandson, Brian Ball. They're a great family. You guys know Ernie Ball Strings, I hope. Ernie's out there in California, and Fender's, Leo Fender's making these guitars, and they're flying off the shelves. And they're just like, they're not even really caring how they make them. They're really inconsistent. They're just making stuff as quick as they can. I mean, he hit a gold mine. Rock and roll Chuck Berry playing a 335, and you get all these guitars. But people were still playing these huge strings, like flat wounds. And they see Chuck Berry, and I guess he had like hands of steel or something. You know, he's ripping on all that stuff and just bending the crap out of his strings. But kids would get their guitar, and they'd be like, I can't do that. I can't even move the string. And so Ernie Ball comes up with, hey, let's take guitar strings and make custom sets that are really thin so you can bend them and play rock and roll. And then you have Dick Dell, like the surfing music and all that stuff. So even guys like Ernie Ball, that's a huge piece of what we do as guitar players. They made even our strings, the way we see guitar strings came from the 50s. So there's this huge evolution of that. And the other thing Leo Fender did that was really huge was the guitar amp. He made the guitar amp something that was very specific. So you ever heard like Van Morrison, Brown Eyed Girl, he says, transistor radio, hey, where did you go? The lyric, he's talking in Brown Eyed Girl. Well, transistor radios were new because radios had always been used with tubes. You ever looked in the back of a guitar amp and see the tubes light up? Well, the transistor was from the 70s. So everything before that, the first radios, the first TVs, the guitar amps, they all had tubes in them. And Leo Fender took basically an electronics manual that was public record in a library. He opened it up, how to build a radio. And he decided, let me change the front of it just a little and plug a guitar amp in. And then that's where you have the early Fender Champs, the Fender Deluxes. When you see those old vintage amps, the little bitty Fender amps and stuff, they're just radios. And he converted them over, and hence here we are with millions of guitar amps that are modified radios. That's what all these are. This is like a, what does this thing cost? $2,000. It's a great amp. Dr. Z's great stuff. You know, and there's features, obviously, the quality, $3,000. But it all started with Leo Fender taking very generic radio designs and saying, we got to get these guitars loud. We have the pickups now. We have these, we got to amplify it. And we're plugging into our radios. The radios aren't good enough. Let's get louder and louder amps. And then you evolve into the 60s. And at that point, Fender's most popular amp was the Bassman, which guitarists use. It's ironic. So if you watch like That Thing You Do or movies like that, those are pretty accurate. They studied pretty well. Those big Bassmans, the whole band plugs in. You see videos of the Beatles when they did play live. It was pretty rare. They'd all just plug their mics and everything into one amp. So you had the, you know, the Beatles are playing these, like, there's footage of them in Tupelo, Mississippi. And they're like up there, hold my hand. You know, they're just strumming along. And their mics are running to the Vox amp behind them with their guitars. Just really primitive stuff. So the evolution of guitar amps, it all just came down the line. And then Hendrix starts playing these Marshall amps. Nobody had really seen them. So Hendrix is a guy from Seattle. And he just, obviously you know who he is. I'm sure you've all heard his approach to guitar was pretty life-changing. And he moves over to London. He plays with a bunch of R&B dudes here in the States, got out of the military, goes over to London, And there's a guy there named Jim Marshall. And Jim Marshall wanted to build, or it's either build or repair. I don't know if anyone really knows. I think he probably just repaired a fender basement. So he has a fender basement on his in his house. He has some electronic knowledge, and he has to replace some parts that got damaged. In Europe, they didn't have the values. They didn't have the parts. He did what he could find, hence the creation of the Marshall JTM-45. And you see Hendrix standing, this wall of amps. Those are modified fender basements. Even Marshalls came from a radio. They came from Fender. Leo Fender is to be credited from anything of our guitar amps, basically. A Vox came around the same time. And so you have, in guitar amplifiers, on that subject, you have two worlds, American and British. American is Fender, British is Vox and Marshall. So tonally, how many people play, just tell me what amps you play. Like, somebody go for it. Blues Junior, so American, yeah. Deluxe Reverb, that is like staple American amp. Supersonic, American amp. AC-15, British. Car Rambler is a Princeton, I think. A Fender Princeton type thing, yeah. Line 6, yeah, so that's a subject to get into. No, it's a good subject to get into. Modeling and stuff, it's crazy nowadays how good it is. Kemper, yep. About half of the world tour rigs I work on, they're not using amps anymore. The first time I started seeing it was, I did some sound check stuff with like Katy Perry's band and stuff, and they just don't use amps anymore. They just say, we're gonna profile amps, use our in-ears, and no matter where we go, it sounds identical. And when you watch a show with this newer profiling stuff, you just can't hear it. I hate to say that. It kills me, it's like a knife in my heart. But it's really good stuff. So, yeah, so you, so basically Fender started it all. Is this good? Is this boring? It's super nerdy. Okay. You're going to, maybe this will be the only time you hear this nerdy stuff. So Fender kind of starts it all. Jim Marshall develops the Marshall. Hendrix gets one at a club. He starts playing it. Hendrix turns it to 10 though. When you see those pictures of Hendrix, like I've replicated what he did and it's insane. Like to actually stand there with a Strat, with his one fuzz pedal and the volume that he had, it's so crazy. I mean, the dude, he would have died later on from that. I mean, it's like, it's a super intense sound. And he just kept saying like, he was all about how it looked, you know, his fashion. If you read his biographies, he was just so into like being seen. Like, so he's like, I want more of them. And he'd do those shows and he'd just push them down and kick them and burn his guitars. And like, it's just amazing, his like approach to guitar. And so Vox comes along around the same time, maybe even a little before. And so Fender uses American tubes. How many know about tubes and what type of tubes? This is really nerdy. But there's really only to this day certain tube sets still used. This Magnatone looks nothing like a Fender, but it is a deluxe reverb. It is a Fender deluxe reverb. That's what it is. It's six V6 tubes, and six V6 tubes have a certain amount of watts per tube. Six L6 tubes have 25 watts per tube. So when you see an amp that has two six L6s, it's a 50 watt amp. It's probably a basement. Like 80% of amps on Earth are basements. This Dr. Z, this is probably Brad Paisley's model. It's a Vox. It's EL84s. The Vox amps were what the Beatles used, but Vox to me is U2. When I think about Vox, growing up with my brother blaring the Unforgettable Fire and War and Joshua Tree, I think of the Edge, the sound of the Edge, the huge delays chiming out, the brittle guitar, but it's still warm. That's Vox, and that's those tubes. It's those EL84s. Then there's a lot of people that use those differently, but I always think of the Edge. So you really have American amps, and then you have British amps. What's confusing is, basically, I'll write this down for you to simplify. If you're amp shopping, there are a million versions of everything. So, let's say You ever seen these things and don't know what it means? The tubes? It's okay to say so. So 6L6 basement. This is my favorite amp. Anything based around a basement. And you have 6V6. That's a deluxe. It's the most recorded amp in history. The Fender just deluxe reverb. That's what you said you had. That's just like, it's on everything you can imagine. Both of these amps are amazing. This Magnatone is this. Then you have EL34, which is Marshall. He didn't have the 6L6s for what he was working on. He pops 34s in, he does a few changes because he couldn't find the parts, and Marshall is born. This tube is clean, a lot of wattage, a lot of headroom. This tube distorts quicker, so it's a smaller amp. Better for smaller venues. This will blow your head off. This is manageable. This distorts quicker. So you think Marshall, you think Hendrix or AC/DC or something. It distorts quicker. There's a reason these people lean towards these amps. And then EL84 is Vox. It's a sharper, chimier. It's very popular in praise and worship, like if not the most popular. And so it's great because there's tons of, like, your delays don't get lost in things. So I'll kind of walk through, starting here with amps, what's important. Talk about headroom. How many have heard the term headroom? How many understand the term headroom? Some people understand it. That's good. So it's really important in electric guitar. So you go buy an amp, and you strum the amp, and you can't get a clean sound. How many have had that happen? Or it's just a dirtier sound? Or how many people bought an amp and you want it to be dirty, but no matter how loud you turn it up, it's just piercingly clean? You had that happen? So that's called headroom. So what I'm playing through now is a Fender Deluxe. I really don't want to kick out, but I need to demonstrate. Is there someone next to me? All right, guys, you ready? I want to... This is where, talking about headroom, I'm going to explain. This morning I quickly said the guitar pedal was invented because the Kinks, the song, they shoved a hole through the speaker and it ratted it out, so that sound. But it wasn't a pedal. So they recorded this thing. It's a huge hit. It's like the part of the British invasion, all that rock and roll that came over. And they had to play this live. They couldn't get up there with like their attitude and be like, it just didn't work. They needed like, it just made, it's way better, trust me. So a guy develops a little circuit. He had to break the way something works to get that sound, and that's the fuzz pedal. And Gibson released it, the Gibson Maestro Fuzz. So the Gibson Maestro Fuzz was the first production pedal. It's why I have a job. It's one little pedal. They made them in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and nobody thought it'd really take off unless you're covering You Really Got Me, and where are you going to cover that in this? Like, it didn't make sense until, Keith Richards gets the Maestro, they're recording that record, and he plays that riff. And they sold like, I think it's something like 50,000 of them or something by catalog. It's pretty unreal. That's where the pedal was created. Fuzz was the first pedal. Let's talk about this amp and what it has to do with the pedals you use. So this is a Fender Deluxe. In the 70s, someone realized when they were playing their Fender Deluxe that it's really clean and pretty, but when you turn it up, I'm sorry for this, everybody. So, you hear that? It's like, do you hear how it's breaking up? Like, they're gonna kill me. If I do that down low, I mean, it's all right, but turned up, not the volume, don't focus on the volume, but how it felt. It was like peanut butter on a piece of bread, like stuck to your mouth kind of feeling. And this is like, is like eating a banana or something. It's like, it's all right. So, this Japanese guy that I can't pronounce his name, this is debatable too. There's two stories. The one I believe is that a man that I can't pronounce his name, he got a deluxe, turned it up, and with the new technology of these transistors and what's called an operational amplifier, a little chip with eight legs, you've probably seen those. There's a chip that was invented called the JRC4558, and he invented the tube screamer, the little green pedal that has ruled the world. There are tube screamers probably out in the parking lot in the grass. They're everywhere. People swear they don't like them. We all use them. I actually don't have one on this board. My moonshine is a variation, but my morning glory, it's in the family. Not really, but it's the concept I will show you with it. So I have my clean sound, but I could hit a pedal. It just sounds like my amp got turned up, but it's manageable. And I can even trim it back. Like, that sounds horrible. Like, yeah, you get the point. So, the overdrive pedal lowers your headroom and distorts your amp that has too much wattage. That's what you're doing with an overdrive pedal. You're simulating turning a tube amp all the way up. And as church players, that's pretty rare. I mean, some of us are fortunate and you put your amp in the back, but like usually, you know, you're getting dirty looks. You how many play with an amp on the stage? Yeah, you turn that up, you're gonna have some people all over you after service. You know, they're not gonna enjoy that. So that's where the tube screamer came from. How many knew that? Anybody know that? That's cool that you knew. Yeah, so out of that, then there's just a host of overdrive pedals. So when you think about overdrive pedals, that's where that comes from. Then obviously you get into sounds like for Marshall, there's different sounds. I have a pedal called the Angry Charlie, or the Andy Timmons here is the same kind of vibe. The EL84 sound is this amp right here. Let me demonstrate the difference in these for you. So, notice the Fender sound. I'm gonna take the verb off, just both pickups. So, so clean, it's almost bad sometimes. Depends on what you're into. Thank you. The Vox really doesn't want to be clean at all. And it's like, it's just very. Can clean it up more, but it's always going to have a brittle, like a more brittle thing. So if you take like a, when you have a ton of effects, like I always just go back to the Edge because he's the first guy to do the tempo based time effects. That amp, if you do that through a Fender, you can do it. It's just much easier with a Vox to replicate. So. Yeah, so it's just really crisp and clear. So that's kind of like amp 101. Somebody throw some questions out about amps. Anybody have a question? General question. Anything? Yeah. Which model is it? Is that? Okay. Yeah. The newer stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So those are like when he was talking, was it Kemper? You're talking about Kemper? So they're modeling. They're taking this amp and they study it inside and out, and then they digitally recreate it. Now, when I got into guitar, I worked at this music store in like 2001. I remember stuff coming through the door, and it was just like so bad, like the early Line 6 stuff. Plus, it weighed like a million pounds, and it was just really bad. But now, I'm building gear that's totally analog, but the digital world is so good. Like, I'm really good friends with the Strymon guys, and they keep putting out overdrives that sound as good as my analog stuff, and they're programming it digitally. So the technology, the bit rates that people use, the sampling rates, it's just so much better. Yeah, so your amp is doing a lot of things. Probably there's a good and a bad side to everything. The good side to yours is you have probably a bajillion sounds. Find a couple you really stick with. The bad side is sometimes maybe a simple tube amp and a few pedals pushes you more creatively. Like, how do you get a different sound out of it? Or you're just less stressed out because you're like, I have my one good clean amp, my pedal, move on my life. See, if I play, I'm not old, so it's hard to say I'm old school because I picture dudes from the 60s playing. They're old. They plug right into an amp. But I picture me playing that stuff and just having anxiety attacks. That's just how my brain is just like, I need like the knob. I want to know if I turn this vibrato on. Done. And so for me, I have to compartmentalize that as a player, or I end up just like, I won't even know what I'm doing. You know, I'll be in the wrong key and sweat rolling down my face and everything. So. Yeah, oh yeah. Well, see, the Line 6 stuff. So like on the new John Mayer tour, he has a guy named Sharky, plays for like D'Angelo and all these, like, insane guitar player. Guess what's under his feet? A Line 6 floorboard. Nobody's going to look at this guy and say, you sound bad. It sounds insanely good. Like, John Mayer's right next to him with his, like, Bradshaw rigs and pedal drawers and, like, left-right stereo system. It was, like, insane to see all that. And then Sharky's over here with a Line 6 floorboard. And live, John hands him, it's so negligible at this point, you know. Yeah, he doesn't. He wasn't originally. The first rehearsals that I were in, he just plugged right in. And he's playing John's parts with built-in effects. And like, John would be like, you're kidding me. And it was like this really fun interaction. So, yeah. Any other amp questions? That's a good question. So that's a really nerdy question. Early tube amps have what's called a tube rectifier, and later ones, sometimes they put a solid-state rectifier. A rectifier is seen as a tube. They're usually bigger. Long story short, I think what you're saying is, a tube rectifier amp sags differently. The louder I turn that amp up, it feels gooier and looser and a little more unpredictable and rock and roll to me. And then the solid-state rectifiers feel more simple and consistent. So my favorite amp is a Sovtek's a mic brand, a Sovtek MIG 50. It's an amp that was made in Russia in the 90s, horrible quality. But I fell in love with them. They're basically basements. I mod them to be nicer. I have a few, and one of them I put a switch. I put both, and in that amp at 50 watts, I can't hear it because I never get there with it. I mean, to turn that amp up is death. And so you have to turn it up so loud. So that's a good question. Anything else? Yeah. A couple things. So I can only speak for me personally, unfortunately, in most cases. I'm kind of a straight up guy. If I plug into an amp and I go straight up and I don't like it, I have this, like, I turn into like an 80-year-old man, and I'm like, I don't want this. This is trash. I really do. I'm that guy at this point. Because on the basements and like the Sovteks or even these amps, they're all at noon. I see guys diamond out frequencies and stuff. It's such a preference. What worries me about diming out frequencies to get what you're wanting means you have nowhere to go. So if you're playing like a Fender amp, I can make this Fender amp sound voxy, but when I do, there's nowhere left to go on the treble. And then part of that's probably just a little OCD, like I don't like that. I don't like being so far out that maybe I'm pushing it in a weird way or something. I think it's just probably preference. I mean, you can make an amp do a lot of different things. Most tone controls work in a way that is not concentric, but there's a thing called a Baxandall tone curve. And essentially, let's say this is treble, mids, and bass on your knobs. Let's say we're at 6. If I turn, let's say that's noon. Most Fender amps say, let's just say noon, whatever. What am I doing? Let's say half. Straight up. If I turn this clockwise, so say I'm there. If I turn here, this whole curve goes over here. If I end up here, and I'm at noon, and let's say I cut this way, they hit each other. So those curves actually hit each other, and you delete this. Some weird thing. But there's actually some, like, there's some really cool tricks with that, too. There's all the, like, there's these mode, like, there's some industry things, like the Motown settings. Put every knob at 7 on a deluxe, and there's, you know, people, there's all these different sounds that came from this Baxandall. Basically, they walk all over each other. They're not divided. But in a lot of amps, they're very divided. How many have played like a Boss Metal Zone pedal? Don't lie. So like those type of EQs are very precise, and they usually don't walk on each other. They're active. They're passive. Most amp EQs are passive. They're not really adding anything. When you take a guitar amp and turn every knob all the way up on the tone, that's how the amp really sounds. That's most any guitar amp. And then as you turn the knobs back, we think it's adding. It's not adding. It's actually just dumbing down and making it warm by the size of a part that's in there. So these are all passive, and they walk in each other. But there are active amps that are like something's powering the EQ, and you can actually add treble and bass. But these classic amps don't do that. That's why I like them. They're really simple. Hard to mess up. Yeah. How late do we have, Till? Oh, because the next session is... We're just going to keep it rolling then. I'm in.
Okay, your take on setting up tone in your basement and then taking them to the church environment where the sound guy says, all I'm hearing is gain and delay and reverb. Sounds epic in the basement.
Yeah, I have that on here, sort of. Yeah, I'll get in like pedals for repair. Like back in the day, I used to repair any brand, and I used to get people's like praise and worship guys. Some of them, I remember getting like DL4 delays from like dudes and turning it on. And I mean, it was like, I don't even know if I can replicate it. It was just so, you'd have like a, something like this. You like hit a knob, it's like. And I would know like what they're playing, and it's like, no, like you're not in Sigur Rós or something, or like, yeah, that's a hard balance. In-ears are hard too. I've actually experienced, you're on the stage, and depending on the quality of your in-ear mixes and where they're coming from, I can't hear delays sometimes. And I end up compensating, and then the front of the house is just like mad town. I mean, it's just like you're lost in a swirling sea. That's just a tough one. I mean, it's kind of, everybody's front of house is different. Everybody's monitoring is different. Everybody's basement is different. It's really tough. I think just being aware of that is like, the fact that you're aware is what matters. And hopefully we all have sound men that care. You know, we know that some of us don't. But you just talk that out and just be aware of it. Because it is about facilitating the song, and you don't want to be like playing some You know, the dude's on the piano. It's like some soft moment, and you're just like. You don't want that. That's serious. So, any questions on amps? I'm going to go to guitars real quick. No?
KT, so
I'm more familiar with KT-66s. KT-66s, I erased it, but they land kind of in the basement land. The 88s, I think they're somewhere in between the 34s and the 6s, so I think they're just dirtier tubes. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'm not super, I mean, I know what they are. I don't know that I've ever played through them. I have KT-66s and a few amps. They're huge, they get really hot. They're really pretty, they're expensive. I don't know that they sound any better. Yeah, but some people, I have friends that are boutique amp makers, and anything you can put that's extravagant, they'll do it, you know.
Have you played with the Roland Moon
tubes? I have not, I've seen those though. And then Roland has those, like, talking about the artificial tubes?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I did some design work for this company named Jet City, like 8 years ago. They disappeared off the face of the earth or something. But I did these pedals, and they had these little 12AX7s that are red, blue, and yellow. It was like you pop them in for different gains. I don't remember how it worked out, but yeah, I don't know. Yeah, probably so. Yeah, because at the end of the day, a pedal using an op amp with 8 legs, a pedal using transistors with 3 legs, or a amp using a tube with the different prongs, they're all just amplifiers. So I have a pedal. We gave it away with the board, the Twin 12. I took one of my favorite amps is an old Silvertone 1484. It's like a mail order catalog amp from the late 60s. Jack White made the whole line of those, little pretty famous with the white stripes. Beck uses them. The Coldplay record, the depressing one. They're all depressing. The really good depressing one. Ghosts. Yeah. What is that record? Yeah, it's a great record. He used it on a lot of that record. So I took the amp schematic and just removed the tubes and put transistors in those places and finessed it. And essentially, you can do that. You can replace tubes with solid state. Yeah, the color box, yeah. So, yeah, that's based around Neve circuitry and stuff. So guitars. What kind of guitars do you guys play? What do you play? G.O., you have 2 humbuckers, or, okay, what do you play? That works. What pickups do you use? What are you going for? Is that your company name? It's like, Pile of Trash Guitars. That's cool, yeah. What about you?
I have a Fender Fast Strat and a 2 humbucker guitar.
So you don't like the single coils, do you?
I really do.
You just...
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you? What do you play?
Starla.
Yep. Okay. You? Jetstream. The Jetstream's like a offset?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you play? What's your favorite thing? Like, if you didn't build it, what would you have to play? The Pile of Crap guitars?
It'd either be a Fender voice Les Paul or a Gibson voice.
I got you. I already know where your guitars are going. You're doing it all. Yeah. You, what do you play?
Strat
and Atelli, single coils. What about you?
I have
355. All right. So, Godin Flat 5 for years. You remember that guitar? It's awesome. I sold it like an idiot. It was a really cool, thin, amazing guitar, and I don't know why I sold it. I don't usually regret gear. I've often had this image of that guitar haunt me. I used to lead worship on a lot because it was really resonant, but it would play well. So back to the guitars, 52 Tellies. Kind of think of that as where electric guitar kind of started. Single coils. So what that means, you've heard single coil? Single coil means there's a magnet and a single coil of wire wrapped around it from positive to negative. But the beauty of the single coil is this noise we hear. Hear that beautiful noise? Depending on where you're at in the positions, that's two of them. Depending on where you stand, nowhere in this room. I remember doing like one of my first, the band I was in, we recorded, were just punk kids, knew nothing. And this engineer, I still don't think this was safe. He comes into the room and he's like, he ties a piece of wire around my bridge. And he like put a thing on my finger. It like stopped it. He was like grounding me through the guitar. I forgot about that. That's one for the book. Yeah, I forgot all about that. Yeah, so they hum. You know, big deal. It is annoying. I'm a single coil guy. I love the Jazzmaster. And I love, these are called dog ears, these little holes, but they're basically like a P90 soap bar. To me, this is exactly what I want as a player. They're very, like, just, they're bright because, they're bright in a good way because, like, when I stack drives, let me show you my basic sounds for the most of my life playing. So I'll use my clean tone. It's always really clean because I play a bass mini thing or maybe a Princeton-y thing. I like how chimey that is. I didn't give anything away. Oh my gosh. Are any of you guys not in the next session? Okay. So, I really like the ability to have a bridge pickup that's really cutting. Hit an overdrive. Stack. I do a Morning Glory, and then I've always used a Klon Centaur as a high gain pedal, and I stack it. You hear how nasally that is? I love it. Because I can get into like, I've ruined this preset. Hold on. There we go. Let me go to like a simple, just a dotted eighth delay or. While I'm doing that, I'm rabbit trailing everywhere, but I'm just going to show you what I do. Is that okay?
Yeah.
It's like such a vast, we're everywhere. Sorry. My go-tos are a clean sound. I usually always run a faint quarter note analog delay in all cases. That's close to where I put it. Something about like that. Yep, the Cub is a DM2 topology, yep. You don't notice, like if you're in a band full, you don't really hear that, like, oh my gosh. Sorry. You want me to tune this though? So yeah, you're not going to hear this delay if you're just like. It's there, but it's not like up front. And then my second stage. See, I'm normally playing through a cleaner amp. I would be over in the, I don't really play Voxes, so I'd be more like, yeah. A little more at home, so. So my bypass is... a first stage drive. Just a little bit more air. It just feels like the amp's louder when I usually can't do the louder amp. And then lead stuff is, I usually just don't turn the Morning Glory off. That's in most cases. Then I would hit a Klon. That's pretty much all of my heavier. So you add the delay in constantly. Most of my tones evolve in that little cluster of stuff. I can stack. I do a lot of stack delays thanks to shoegaze music from the 90s. But now that's popular in praise and worship, or was. So I'd add a dotted eighth on top of the quarter. So the quarter note goes, I add a dotted eighth. And just depending on settings, so. Or, you know, you just go into the most worn out thing ever. But it's there, you know. What's crazy is I imagine these, you know, Brian Eno's working with The Edge when that sound was created, and they're literally taking Memory Men and, like, turning the knobs perfectly to the drum. It's like insane. But now I use this master control tap. So it's made by Disaster Area. I'm gonna do one eventually, but I have my Eventide H9, which is, the H9 is my catch all. I have this controller down here. I'll kind of show that to you. But my tap, my tempos are all on one button. So let's say I'm 94 beats per minute now. 184, it's syncing everything. It's a small computer, and I can hit one button and just. And then within the H9, I think it's the best guitar pedal in the last 20 years. I think it's phenomenal. I don't like the digital element of adjusting it. It's like you were saying, like in your basement, it's been something really difficult for me to get down, but like you use your iPhone, you Bluetooth in, there's an app, and you adjust your settings. It's already causing me to sweat thinking about it. But like, I can go through my presets if you look in here. I built 14 presets that are essentially what I might use, but really won't ever use, and they're on my board. So it's like, it's not the core of my sound, but I have a good slap delay. That's, you know, in church we're always doing that. We're like, Brian Setzer worship. Yeah. That puts like a whole new meaning to that jumpin' jivin' song. Yeah, jump, jive, and praise. I have a big washy, like, just an untempoed washy delay, like a Memory Man. And the repeats are modulated. They're like, oh, they're gargling. The dotted eighth setting. Oh my gosh. That's all right. So dotted eighths, you know, the U2 thing. Then I have a dotted eighth full of reverb, because why not? And I use this setting more for just, there's times when you're playing guitar when you can facilitate not being heard, but if you fall out, they notice. Like trying to make a part, like if a song is just, like almost a pad. If I turn that off, just doesn't linger. So I sometimes, you know, we always think of dotted eighth as like the rhythmic, but sometimes I use the dotted eighth verb thing very much as a, you know, kind of. Yeah, and especially if you add the quarter note back in that I usually always have on anyway, it becomes a really nice pad. So most of my pad sounds are made out of a dotted eighth with verb. Yeah, you can scroll. I use this for presets, a little simple expression thing, but you can scroll through. If I need to reach down like I did, I can adjust the depth and stuff. Then I have a reverse delay. I use a ton of reverse delay. So like take a passage. Yeah, and it just reverses it out. That's probably from my love of Oasis. So like, it's even, it just depends, you know, I'm not playing a song, so I'm not very inspired, but like. It's pretty cool. Just what that does as a whole. So if you. It's pretty cool. And you obviously have to not be annoying with it. You can be very annoying with that. Factoid nobody cares about. Reverse delay. Who knows where it came from? Anybody? First recording of it. What is reverse delay? What is delay? So delay came from tape machines. Probably the first delayed segments were, I think Hendrix is pinned as it, or the Beatles. So you take a tape machine, you record a guitar track. So a dude plays a riff, whatever, plays a riff. And they would copy the tape, a second tape of the same thing. They'd line it up a little off and play it. And so it'd go dun, dun. The second tape would actually, it's actually a copied cassette, like a roll tape laid over. And then reverse delay, so Hendrix Red House, I think is what's credited. The guitar solo, he's doing this blues stuff. And all of a sudden, this back in. The Beatles used it a ton on vocals. They would just take the tape, record a dub, like a cassette tape dub, put it in, find where they wanted it, but play the tape backwards and track that onto a new track. That's where delay and tape and reverse delay. So, but now we have it made. I have a computer on my board. Another sound I use a lot is an octave delay. So, that's not it. So, you'd use. So, my repeats are going up octaves. So. A fairly simple, useful, just depends on the song. It's just a texture, something different. Simple hall reverbs. And this is a digital pedal, by the way. Like we were saying, digital, I love this pedal. I'm not supposed to say that. Spring reverb, which is, spring reverb is literally sending your guitar signal through a coiled spring back to itself. These amps have it. So like this amp has a spring reverb. And you can always tell, just turn it up and slam it into the floor. Don't, you like that? But yeah, it's literally a spring, and it's like in a metal cage. But yeah, spring reverb is like American History 101. You know, it's just like. It's just really nice. And if you add like lush trim or. Really pretty. This amp has a great trim. Thank you. sounds old and comfortable. It's like gravy and biscuits or something. Shimmer. I'm not a huge fan of Shimmer, but I'm a huge Brian Eno and U2 fan. So Shimmer has its place. Well, Shimmer is basically delay or reverb, but the decay of the effect has octaves in it. So you play, there's a verb, and then as the verb expands, octaves go out. So Brian Eno invented that on some U2 record, where they basically were playing with rat gear, and they sent the reverb into these octaves. And so you end up with really cool. Comes up at the top, really pretty. Can be really annoying. It depends. If you don't have a keyboard player, though, I mean, I've been in a lot of worship sets where it's very useful. It's creepy, in like the best way. Welcome to creepy worship. That's nice. I have a setting called Black Hole. It's pretty self-explanatory. Just like, we'll never end, basically. It's pretty much just as much as you put into it. You can make it in the setting. Yeah, I just use it like that. One of my favorite pedals is an Earthquaker Devices Dispatch Master. They're good friends. I copied that into here. I set up all night one night, and I copied how it sounded because I just like didn't want it on my board. I used it like once every month, but it's just a certain tempo and a like certain way that the reverb sounds that. I use it a lot. Kind of ripping on like Rush of Blood to the Head, Coldplay records and stuff. That's the sound. Then I have a trim setting. Digital chorus, doesn't get a lot of love. Not playing like much 80s stuff these days. Yeah, so I use that. I use either a Univibe in vibrato or a chorus pedal in vibrato. It's one of my favorite effects. Anybody know a band named Dolls? So I really loved it. They have a track called Time Spent in Los Angeles. In the beginning, he's the Boss VB2. And I really started to fall in love with this sound. Like barely turning it on and... make it even more subtle. It's just something happening that's not the same. Like it's just another. But then I'll end up using it more. Yeah, totally. I'll stack it with something like if I want to get real shoegazy and like emotional. So there's a constantly moving modulation under this wash. So I use that a lot. Fuzz, and another one of my effects, this will be the last thing on the board, and we can talk a little bit more about whatever. I use a treble booster, so a germanium treble booster, like a Dallas Rangemaster. Anybody ever heard of that? Ever heard Queen? We Will Rock You. So when that solo comes in, it sounds really cool. He hit Vox amps that were already on fire. He had them up so loud with what's called a Rangemaster. It's a treble booster. The funny thing about that is, who wants to boost the treble? It's like the worst name ever. Yeah, that's what you always think. So I have it in front of all my drives. And long story short, here it is by itself. It's pretty bad. You shake your head though, but it's, you'll see. What do you think about that? You like that? How about? That's really bad. It's like painful. But put it before a drive. So like when you're delayed out, they're definitely gonna kick me out. Here we go. It basically pushes those pedals to the point that they just can't even breathe. They're just, it's distorting them so bad. So, yeah, there's clipping in it, definitely. Yeah, so if you listen closely. It has a range. This is a guy, Daredevil from Chicago, really nice guy. So here's like just the Klon. I like it. It's not for everybody. That's the best part about pedals. So let's talk about guitars. So we talked about single coils. A single coil hums, and then Les Paul invented the humbucker. So there, let me see that strap. So the humbucker, what does it do? It bucks the hum. I don't know what buck really means, but I think it means stop, apparently. That's the logical thing. So this is like Back to the Future, man. Marty McFly is on the stage. He's laying down. You know that scene. The 335. It's immediately bassier, warmer, fatter, wonderful. I prefer harshness. But, I mean, I have hollow bodies. I like humbuckers, too, but... If I had to pick one guitar, it would not be this. Because I have to have a trim. Without movement, I just suck. I'm not any good. I have to constantly move my chords. So this is totally silent. So what they do is they take and they wrap those poles in a way that it cancels the humbucking pickups. But... I mean, you can't do that on that guitar. That's such a definitive difference in how this guitar reacts. You add some drive to it. Add more drive. I mean, that just feels like way more gain. So the thing about the humbucker is it has, at most times, it's pushing almost twice the voltage. So your lower headroom amp, wow, that tastes horrible. Lower. So there's zero, and let's say zero is 25 watts. You have a 25 watt amp. Like say your deluxe, your guitar, you hit a note, you send voltage, you barely play it, but you hit that chord hard, that's clipped off and made into distortion. So the sound of this is because you force that note, there's nowhere to go. Like you hit 25 watt, the voltage of the guitar is like, I'm dying, and it just, there's a lid. But if you take the same thing and make your 50 watt amp, you didn't quite hit it, did you? You had more headroom. And so these pickups, there's a basis down here, which is how, you know, to do this math equation, your guitar, let's say this 335 puts out 10, single coil puts out 5, it's gonna put out twice as much energy, you're gonna hit the roof quicker. Humbuckers are just more hot. Yeah, so my Morning Glory did not sound like this. Like, I I don't even know how that's happening. It's so bizarre. You know, I would never, that's just not how I use that pedal. Then you hit the clon. I mean, this is. Hit the treble booster for you. That sounds way better though, right here. So if I was in a session or something, I'd be like, okay, because this is a darker guitar and I'm gonna make it even brighter. Why not? So. See, that's beautiful. So this guitar, it won me over because of the treble booster. That's a good example. Yeah. So, yeah, this, and then, please ask questions. I feel like I'm rambling endlessly, so. It depends on how the pickups are wound. Technically, yes. Well, the original, yeah, it will, but it won't quite all the way. I'll show you something on here. The Strat. These look like mandolins on me. It's okay. I'm secure. Oh, it feels good, though. The Strat is just, it's a great instrument. So the Strat came after the Tele. And they never had the five-way switch. Here's another nerd story. How many know the five-way switch? Originally, it was just three. This, this, or this. And about 10 years in, the switches started wearing out. And a lot of famous players, like Clapton's Strat, he would find these notches. He'd go, and he'd like leave it right there. And he made his own position, which turned on both. It was an accident. The switches were wearing out, and then Fender invented that switch. Useless facts of knowledge. This is the stuff where my wife's like, nobody cares, Josh. But I'm like, they need to know. So the Strat is the most brittle, I think. But it's so nice, brittle. Like, it's. I mean, Strats are like Hendrix used them. They're brittle because, yeah, they're thinner sounding. But what's really cool. It's like, I am always fascinated when a guy like Eric Johnson, or like Andy Timmons, or let's see, as I scroll endlessly. Yeah, so they'll take these thin guitars and they hit dark amps with dark drive pedals, and it's like really cool. It's like the thinnest guitar ever, but because of the darkness of what you go into, it's really cool. And then you have, you know, all the blues guys, which something about the Strat just. Do you hear that attack? Like you hear every scrape of my pick. Like a duck. Yeah, so it's a very particular sound. What's that? Yeah, I'm in these two. So you have the neck middle, which, hear the hum? It goes away, kind of. That's called 60 cycle hum is the name of that. So, kind of goes away. Middle, it comes back alone. That is so, like, really mid-rangey. Just like a lot of those John Mayer solos and stuff that are so cool. The middle is just so honky, like, up in your face. This is canceling noise again. Then the bridge is very similar to the Jazzmaster bridge. Yeah, so that's a Strat. And then the Tele. Yeah, the Tele. So if I had to pick one guitar, though, to take on a desert island, it would be a Telecaster for sure. I think so. Because I really can do anything with a Telecaster. I think that's it's the most, like the Jazzmaster has serious limitations. Like you heard the difference in, you heard when I played like the blues stuff on the 335, like the Jazzmaster's not gonna do that. But this guitar, these guitars are, it's funny because it's the first thing. And it's like, I still think holds up. So you can go to any concert on the earth. Like, I'll just tell you bands I have worked with and the variations of where I see this guitar. Under Oath. Tom Petty. That alone. I mean, like, seriously, Brad Paisley. Death Cab. I mean, like, it's just, it does everything. It's very simple, three positions. It has the bridge pickup, but the bridge pickup is not as trebly. It has a lot of girth. Like, I mean, this just sounds like Tom Petty. So. It's just a good rhythm sound, but then you hit the right pedals and you know you got... You can do the plucky stuff. So, country, metal. Metal? You want me to play metal? I need to plug that board up. Yeah, I mean, you're forcing me into my... I don't know much metal. I know like really bad post-metal. I don't have enough drive. I do. What am I talking about? Hold on. That's all I got to offer you. But yeah, something about, I mean, you hear how crazy that is. I just went from like jangly, happy country to. But then you got this neck pickup, which is like gold. Put a little compression on. All of a sudden, you know, you're like, it's crazy. Just a cool guitar. So this is my desert island. Probably a lot of people's. I don't like Bigsby's. I know, I would just I feel like it's like sacrilegious. Yeah. Any questions on guitars? No? Yeah.
Just on the tapping the delay, do you ever play, are you always big right into the tempo of the song, or is it a big deal?
A lot of effects, I don't want them on tempo. Like tremolo, I don't ever want it on tempo because I feel like it. Something about tremolo that's just moving. Like, so I have, so under my board are some pedals that are always on, and one of those is a tremolo, so, that I forgot about. I have a whammy under my board too. So. So this is just under my board always on. It's a Cusac tremolo. The knobs got hit, but that's kind of, what session are we in at this point? Oh, well, you guys need to take a break. Yeah. I'll break it down really quick and we'll move on. So then I have a whammy. So I use like an octave up. I used to carry around a huge whammy pedal. So Radiohead, the bends, like all of that stuff. I'll use that sound a lot. So if I'm doing something with more gain. Sorry, wrong button. It doesn't sound practical, but it's great. I mean, you can really use that in more ways than you'd imagine. Even like small lapel. Like, say you have verb on and stuff. Just something to make your guitar sound different. Yep. So I just have it under my board, mounted, always on, octave up. Yep. Because I used to carry the big pedal around, and it's like huge, sitting on the floor. So it's really convenient. Yeah, let's just break there, go get some water or something. We'll talk more in a minute.